Down south, they say it's the economy, stupid. Up here, we say it's the economy, eh? And this is Political Economy Radio, a progressive take on economic issues in Canada and beyond. My name is Michał Rozwodowski, and welcome to the inaugural episode. My focus today will be postal banking. Now, many of you may have heard about the drastic cuts announced at Canada Post. What you may not have heard about is the idea of adding banking and financial services to the post office, turning it also into a kind of bank. While this is only a proposal in Canada at the moment, it is a reality across many countries and indeed has helped many of them weather some of the same transformations currently facing Canada Post. Postal banking is an antidote to the logic of service and jobs cuts. It is an expansion into new, useful public services that helps ensure the sustainability of existing ones. My first guest in today's conversation about postal banking is John Anderson. John is an independent researcher who has a long career in politics, labor, nonprofit, and academia. Most recently, he wrote a very substantial report on postal banking for the Canadian Centre for Policy Alternatives. Its title, Why Canada Needs Postal Banking, is telling. Here is my interview with John Anderson. Hi, John. Thanks. Thanks again for doing this interview with me, and welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Let's get right to it then. In your report, you begin with an analysis of the state of banking and other retail services in Canada. You note several what I thought were somewhat opposing trends. So on the one hand, there's been a decline in physical bank presence with branches closing and the number of branches dropping somewhat precipitously over the past decades. And part of the reason for this, of course, is the rise of internet banking and other forms of banking that don't require in-person contact. But on the other hand, there's also been a rise in non-traditional financial services. So both banking services offered by large retail outlets like Canadian Tire and what you call fringe financial institutions such as payday lenders. And there's also lots of communities that are completely unserved by banks. So on the whole, there appears to be a serious gap in financial services that a postal bank could fill. So I was wondering if you could start by telling me a bit more about this gap and how Canada Post is especially well-placed to fill it, maybe just also giving a brief introduction to what the term postal banking stands for.
Well, it's postal banking. Let's start out with that last part. In the sense that postal banking is something which has been around since the 1860s, started first by the British Post Office, and then, of course, copied in Canada and in the United States at that same time. And in fact, up until 1968, in both the United States and Canada, we had financial services offered by the Post Office. And they were only so that for over 100 years in Canada, we had financial services over the post office. Essentially, it was a postal savings bank which was set up, and it was one of the biggest banks in Canada at that time, particularly in the late 19th and early 20th century. Now, that declined in terms of its operation. They didn't modernize it. And at the same time as the United States closed theirs down, we closed ours down. However, in other countries where the postal banking system has been modernized and where it's kept up in terms of the way that it delivers services, postal banking is a very, very, very strong means of supporting the post office. And so I think it's something which in Canada, we have a post office which has the largest number of retail outlets of any company, public or private, in Canada. So it has these retail outlets, 6,500 or more outlets across
right.
the country, and it can offer different services to Canadians. And certainly one of them would be postal banking. Now, postal banking, and I'll just say this one thing more, is that, I mean, postal banking, there's really a problem there in the sense that many communities, both rural and urban, no longer have a branch bank. And so whereas there is often a post office, and this happens even in my own urban neighborhood in Ottawa, where the bank closed down, the postal service is still there. And I think that this is something which can be used by all classes of people could use postal banking services. But certainly one of the target groups that I'm particularly interested in is people who right now use what we call fringe financial institutions, the money marts and the cash money locations, where they borrow money, usually borrow money on their paycheck. So often they have some kind of income, whether it's a paycheck or welfare or whatever, and they borrow money that at tremendous interest rates which are into the hundreds of percent per annum. And now the post office and could offer these same kind of loans and overdrafts for a reasonable interest rate, still make money on that, but at the same time, ordinary Canadians who use these services would not be ripped off in a terrible way, which is the way that they're being ripped off today.
Yeah, that's interesting, and it's good that you mentioned that, you know, the post office could actually make money off of this. I mean, we recently saw a report. We learned that Canada Post had looked into postal banking internally, and in fact, they had spent almost 4 years researching this topic. And you know, they themselves termed it a proven diversification strategy. They called it a quote win-win strategy, and they saw few obvious risks to it. You looked at the economic viability of it, and I think you drew the same conclusions, right?
Yes, and in fact, I was very happy to see that when they studied many of the same international postal banks, they found exactly the same results, that they were all very favorable in terms of the profits that were contributed by postal financial institutions to the postal system. And of course, you know, this is important because we need a viable postal system is extremely important for Canadians. But certainly this is something which the post office, previous to this administration, has been looking at and has been thinking this could be an option for us. And the one thing is, and one of the reasons people say, well, how can it be, you know, doesn't it take a lot of money to set up a postal bank or postal financial services? And the answer is no, because one of the big things is that you've got the bricks and mortar and you've got the staff. In the UK, where the UK, it's complicated because they have the Royal Mail, which is just being privatized, which is the delivery service, and the post office, which is still public service, which offers the financial services. Well, the post office there, to offer financial services, they hired 300 people for the UK, which is a much bigger country than ours in terms of population.
Right.
So it doesn't take a lot of experts at the center to be able to deliver the financial services. And, you know, the retail staff, which now works in the post offices across the country, can be trained to do that kind of delivery, and experts can be brought online or Skyped in or physically present at certain times a week to do more complex financial transactions.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I mean, intuitively, it just seems like you have something there. It's not that big a deal to add services to it. And I mean, I think it's also interesting that you mention the UK and the other G8 countries, which are still doing home delivery. And I mean, and in your report, you also looked at how other countries deal with postal banking. And it seems that, you know, you found that postal banks are actually quite ubiquitous, especially in the industrialized countries, and that they help, you know, sustain the financial viability of national posts, especially during this time of transition away from traditional postal services. And you found, you know, a range of sort of successful models internationally. And I hope that you could tell us a little bit about those, about what the sort of models are. And, you know, and is Canada Post sort of flaunting a sort of, you know, international consensus by leaving this off the table?
Well, it is certainly going the wrong way from where most financial institutions, most postal financial institutions are going, and most postal services are going, which is using this financial services. And, you know, financial services are also can be brought in a number of different ways. So it isn't something like overnight the post offices have to offer the complete services that the TD Bank offers or that the local credit union offers. They can be brought in stage by stage, and some of them can be run completely by and completely owned and controlled by the post office, and some of them can be done in a partnership. So we can go a number of different routes. I'd also like to say that, you know, what has been particularly interesting for me is that some of the banks, and particularly two I looked at, which was the Kiwi Bank, which is the New Zealand post office bank, and the Banque Postale, which is the French, from France, post office bank. Both of those have decided that one of the things that they want to do is really offer products to low income, and in the case of New Zealand, to Aboriginal citizens. On the French side, they have particular the whole series of education programs which they've set up in terms of low-income citizens in terms of financial services, which we don't have here. I mean, we have such a disaster in terms of the number of people who feel forced to use these fringe financial institutions, and yet we don't really have any really good financial education programs which are actually targeted at in large measure at low-income citizens. There's a few credit unions which do some, but by and large, most people don't have the knowledge of how to use the financial services when you're a low-income citizen, and the French Postal Bank does that. It also has particular accounts which it aims at not-for-profits and co-ops and social economy institutions. So it has said, okay, we're going to target this whole group of organizations which have been left out of the traditional financial institutions, financial services. So we're going to offer products to these kinds of institutions. So there's a lot of things that a postal bank could do in Canada, which would be different from the way the traditional banks operate.
That's exactly it. That there's a lot of things that postal bank could do, and it's because it has this sort of existing network and existing presence and existing trust that's been built up over so long that it can offer, as you say, low cost services, and innovative services. And still, I mean, I've seen your reports. There's a table that shows, how well these financial services do financially, and they're actually helping to sustain the post offices. They're bringing in, the majority of profits in some cases are coming from the financial institutions.
Sure, like 2/3 of the profit in many of the profits in many of the countries I looked at were brought in by the postal financial institutions. So there's really, like in Italy, in Switzerland, in New Zealand, in those three countries, more than 2/3 of the profits come from the financial services. So I think it's, something which, it's really a win-win situation. And in fact, the U.S., I'm very happy to see that the U.S. Post Office Inspector General, came up with their report just recently, which you can download online, and it also endorsed the financial services, and it really said that it was a win-win situation because the post office could offer those particular products to low-income citizens and to people who are not being served by traditional financial services. So I think that's something which should be offered and could be offered. I mean, it's really, we've got this system which is great, and before we start shutting down the more post offices, because I mean, certainly what the post office has proposed is that they're going to shut home delivery. They've also proposed we're going to rationalize even further the postal system. And so what this means is in the future, more post offices will be closed down across the country. That's what it means. They've already closed in the last three decades 1,700 post offices. And so the question is, we've still got a lot of them left. Now, if we're going to go the route of closing down even more, then a lot of the potential for really using the post office in particularly in locations where there are no financial institutions will be lost.
Yeah. No, that sounds exactly right. All right. Well, I think we're going to have to stop it there. I mean, it's been a very interesting conversation. I wanted to thank you again for joining me to talk about this important issue. And let's hope that your report will, not be just a source of critique, but a real blueprint for the possibilities for innovative financial services in Canada.
Well, thank you very much. And people can download it on the Canadian Center for Policy Alternatives website in both French and English. It's available there.
Yep, I'll be including a link. Wonderful. Thanks Great. Again, John.
Thanks a lot. Bye for now.
That was John Anderson, author of the CCPA report, Why Canada Needs Postal Banking. My next guest is George Floresco. George is the third vice president of the Canadian Union of Postal Workers, CUPW. George has been with Canada Post for 35 years. He is a past president of his local in Winnipeg and has been at the national office of the union for 12 years. The CUPW has advocated for postal banking long before the current round of cuts was announced. Here is my chat with George. So, hi, George. Thanks again for taking the time to speak with me.
Hi.
As I mentioned, I just spoke with John Anderson, who authored that very substantial report on postal banking for the CCPA. And I'm sure you know all the details of that report and more about postal banking in Canada, as the CUPW has championed the idea of postal banks since, since as far as the 80s, as I understand it. I want to ask you first why this idea has been important for the CUPW.
Well, there's a number of reasons for us pushing this project. First of all, we think that it's an important service to offer the public, and offering it through a public corporation like Canada Post is a positive thing. Second, it will generate a lot of revenue for Canada Post, and in the economic climate we're living in right now, it's tough to make a go of any business. But we think that the revenue would certainly help with the overall performance of Canada Post. And third, it means jobs, decent paying jobs for our members and for future members.
Right. And how specifically do you think postal banking could impact on the job cuts that have actually already been announced by Canada Post?
Well, we see the postal banking revenue as being able to support the continuation of door-to-door delivery and also to expand door-to-door delivery to areas that don't currently have it. We tend to forget about those in this campaign because the focus is on where Canada Post wants to cut, but there are large segments of the population that don't have it and should have it. So we think the revenue would help us with that, and we look at the examples in other countries where those revenues are quite significant. So we think it's an important avenue of growth for Canada Post, and we think that it's something they should be pursuing.
Right, and actually, as you mentioned, there's lots of models internationally of postal banking, from sort of, you know, a minimum of just partnering with an existing institution all the way to a full-service chartered bank. And what do you think are some of the most promising possible avenues available for postal banking in Canada?
Well, I think let's start with the basics. I think simply allowing people to have a bank account, especially in the rural areas, the northern areas of the country, and in the major cities, in areas where banks have basically closed their branches. People need to have a bank account, a place they can go to, and it's to try and avoid people going to these private money mart or private stores where they charge exorbitant interest rates just to cash your check or to borrow money on a short-term basis. So we think you start with that, and then there could be expansion to other financial services. Some countries offer mortgages to people. Some of them deal with NGOs and other community groups offering banking services that they can't get from banks. And in some cases, they offer small short-term loans that people need to survive or businesses need to survive. These are all examples from other countries, and Canada Post could offer those services.
Right. And I mean, as you say, there's a wide range of services, yet it's instead of pursuing this idea of postal banking further, it seems that Canada Post executives actually decided to keep a report that they've been compiling for 4 years secret on postal banking, and they've actually embarked on a widely publicized austerity agenda with rate increases as well as job and service cuts. What do you make of the suppressed report and the way in which postal banking has been almost, actively denied as an option by current executives?
Well, actually, I'm quite stunned that they would have done a major, I think, 3 or 4 year study on banking, and all the meetings we've had with them up until, including the one we had just had before the Christmas holidays, they simply would not comment on it. They basically told us, oh, we looked at it, but it's not feasible. End of story. And then we get this report, and even though there's over 700 pages that have been redacted, withdrawn from the report, there's enough in there to see that they actually took it quite seriously, that it's a positive issue for them, and it was described as a win-win strategy. And so for them to reject it is just unbelievable. Why they rejected it? Well, I guess everyone's got their suspicions. I would tend to think they got a phone call from Parliament Hill saying back off. You know, the government has been hands-on in the corporation, despite what they say. They're quite influential. They ordered a study done on the rural mailboxes. They brought in back-to-work legislation. They're quite active when it comes to certain parts of Canada Post, so I don't think this is any different. And now we have the government basically saying, don't go into the banking sector, even though you can save money. Instead, attack the workers and attack service.
Right. And, I mean, there's also been arguments, you know, Canada Post says that it doesn't have the experience or the expertise to enter the financial services sector, or that it can't compete with existing financial institutions. Do you think these are valid arguments in this debate?
Well, I went to buy something at Canadian Tire a couple of years ago. I don't see any expertise there in running a bank, yet they've got a bank. I buy my groceries at Loblaws. They have a bank, but what expertise do they have? I don't know. Walmart has a bank. Companies set up financial services all the time. And I think Canada Post's argument that they don't have the expertise, frankly, is a reflection on their ability. And if they don't have the expertise now, maybe they should get some people in there who do have some expertise in running a business that provides service growth, not service cuts for more money.
Great. And I have a last question. I mean, I know, and something a little broader, I know the CUPW has long been at the forefront of sort of struggles for maintaining and improving public services, either through both your support for keeping Canada Post public and expanding its role to, I know you guys do a lot of solidarity with other unions that have been fighting cutbacks in public services. So how does Canada Post's current strategy of cuts in services and jobs figure in the broader condition of Canada's public sector? And how do proposals like public banking, postal banking, fit into larger struggles over public services?
Well, I think Canada Post announcements are part of an overall plan to attack public services at all different levels, whether it's federal, provincial, or municipal, and to turn over a lot of these services to the private sector, who know they can make some big profits off of certain elements of it. For example, the post office, there's lots of money to be made in urban centers, not so much in rural areas. So, this overall strategy of attacking public services is nothing more than to increase the profits of some private corporations. And I think that what has to be done is that there has to be more of emphasis on the negative aspects of this and the long-term effects of getting rid of public services. And we think that there's a lot of people out there, a lot of the public who support the concept of public services and understand why it should be maintained and not cut back. So we're part of a growing group of people who are going to be opposing not only the cuts of Canada Post, but also the overall attack on public services that's going on. It's being driven by the Harper government. There's no doubt about that. They have some allies in some of the provincial and municipal governments, but they don't feel the impact as much as the federal government. And right now, the workers are the workers and the public who receive the services are the ones who are suffering.
Thanks. Thanks again for being my guest. And best of luck in your struggles to maintain and hopefully expand public services across Canada.
Thank you very much for the opportunity.
That was George Floresco, Vice President of CUPW. As George mentioned, the push to institute postal banking can be part of a broader campaign that focuses on the importance and value of public services. Postal banking can not only sustain and expand the vital public service that is the post office, it is also a thread in a wider conversation about the role of finance in the economy. If banking can be run as a public service by the post office, why not place even more of the financial sector under public and democratic control? As a society, we've decided to make a large number of resources public. In some ways, of course, the dollars flowing through the economy are different from the power flowing through our electricity grids, or the medicines flowing through the IV tubes in our hospitals. And yes, there are a host of technical issues that will have to be ironed out in order to make finance public. These, however, are not the stumbling blocks. There is a political argument to be made that finance is a resource, like healthcare or education, that is too valuable to be left to the market. The financial crisis that began in 2008 and whose damaging effects we continue to see worldwide has reminded us about the crucial and potentially destructive role of finance in the modern economy. Rather than using finance to inflate bubbles, create unaffordability in housing, and transfer wealth to the already rich, imagine if we used finance to fund socially useful projects. Desperately needed infrastructure such as housing, transit, and clean energy sound like far better funding goals than plowing more money into overstuffed corporate cash accounts and the alphabet soup of modern financial instruments. Credit is a resource. The question is how and on what grounds we distribute this key resource, so necessary for the economy to function and potentially benefit all. Postal banking has the potential to open the way to this and a host of other crucial questions about the economy. Of course, at the moment, postal banking is most important as a concrete proposal to save a concrete public service. To this end, I had a chance to exchange a few words with David Bush. He is among a group spearheading community solidarity organizing against the current cuts at Canada Post and helps run a website called Support Postal Workers. I asked him what role postal banking could play in the campaign to save Canada Post. His answer will be the final word today. Thank you for joining me, and until next time, here is David Bush.
Yeah, I mean, I think the campaign is just getting going. Like, there's a whole bunch of different communities, different cities across the country have been rolling out door-knocking campaigns and doing canvassing of different neighborhoods across the country. I just knocked on this door the other day, last weekend, actually. And, you know, I had this rap talking about how, you know, Canada Post is actually profitable or whatever. And this person said, you know, that's a bad thing to say. Public service shouldn't be just about that. It is about providing a legitimate service. And one of the things that postal banking puts on the table is the idea that, like, we can actually not just say we want to keep Canada Post as is, we need to offer other types of solutions to legitimate changes that are going on in the postal system. Again, they're not as dire as Canada Post management says, but we can actually start to, I think when we raise those issues of postal banking, it really piques people's interest. They're saying, like, yes, we could do that. And I think that is a real opening that we should definitely be pushing on.